Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thank you so much for joining me today in the KYMN studios as we go ahead and celebrate all things creating and share stories together, hoping to tune our imaginations and maybe find some inspiration. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about my childhood. I recently looked at a picture of my first childhood home, the one that I grew up in from, I think, the ages of a year to 11 or 12, I think it was, when we moved away. And it was so fun to see the picture. And it is amazing how you can instantly be transported inside the rooms of a house that you can only see from the outside when you're looking at a picture. And I instantly imagined the yellow and orange linoleum in the kitchen, the wavy yellow gold plastic divider into the living room, the swinging saloon-like shutters in the doorway to the kitchen, the red corded bedspread on the brass bed in Grandpa's room, and the twin beds in the yellow room that my sister and I shared. The thing that I remember of smell that comes to my mind from that house is freshly cut wood from my dad's workshop in the basement. There were always saws buzzing and sanders going and hammers hammering. My dad spent hours building stuff for the house. He would craft creature homes for our crickets, snakes, salamanders, and baby bunnies we found in the woods. He built shelves, doghouses, cabinets, shutters, and it seemed to me anything that we could ever need. I so admired his ability to dream, design, draw, and make most anything out of wood. And I often wondered what he would have been able to make if he had more time and a bigger workshop. I've really learned to appreciate well-crafted woodworking from him, and that's why I'm excited to introduce you today to Art Zany's guest. And my guest today is Justin Hossel. He designs and builds woodwork that is mid-century inspired and focused on simple, clean design. Beauty is found in featuring exposed edges of plywood, contrasting wood tones, and minimalist ideas for maximum effect. You can learn more at Hossel, H-O-S-S-L-E, woodworks.com. And he's here today to talk about the Lakeville Art Festival. Last year, he won Best in Show, and he's going to join us today to share his art story and preview his booth at the 2022 Lakeville Art Festival, which is happening this weekend, Saturday the 17th from 10 to 5, Sunday the 18th from 10 to 4. You can get information on their beautiful show at lakevilleartcenterfriends.org/art-festival. So there's a lot. We'll keep talking about that throughout the show, but I want to turn on the mic and bring my guest, Justin Hossel, into the Art Zany Radio studio. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. It's a thrill to be able to talk to you. And I do want to encourage our listeners, unless they're driving, to go to your website and take a peek at some of the pieces that you've created. It's just really amazing what you can do. So I thank you for being here. I wonder if you could start by just letting us know a little bit about how do you describe your work, or what your when people say, what do you do? How do you respond?
You know, when I describe, as you've already said, is mid-century inspired. I really like to focus on simple designs. I strip back anything extravagant that doesn't need to be there. And I really go for a simple, well, my tagline, simple, clean, and
and it's, you're right, it's mid-century inspired. There's some Scandinavian elements to it, some Danish teak modern style elements. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's really amazing, I think, how you do the edges of your work. So I'd love to, because your materials are not what I expected looking at the pictures and then reading about it. So tell us how you achieve that. What's your secret?
Yeah. So, you know, it really started by accident when I started playing around with woodworking. I found a product that's a Baltic birch plywood, and that just means it's layers of birch, hardwood birch, stacked and glued together. And this was a really cool product because it's 13 layers, and on the outside, it's veneered in solid walnut. So it's just a really nice, high-quality look. It gives the edges of the furniture kind of almost a striped look, in a way. It's hard to describe. You really have to see it to know exactly what it is. But yeah, it gives a really nice effect. It's a really solid and structural product because it's not going to move around like a, you know, if you've got any wood furniture in your home that's solid wood, you know that in Minnesota, when the weather changes, it might expand or contract, and suddenly you've got a crack here or it doesn't sit level on the floor there. Mm-hmm. So this avoids all of that, which is kind of awesome. And originally when I found the product, I'm like, well, I'll put edging on it so it looks like solid walnut. And then I, as most of the prototype pieces do, they end up in our home, and I built one for myself and said, huh, that's kind of cool the way it is.
Well, that's a product. I was going to say, that's a product I've never heard of, because when you say the word plywood, most of us think, you know, the thing you put down for the floor, exactly. Right? Just as your layer that you're going to build on top of, that you wouldn't make furniture out of it. So it's a deceiving name, because if it's made of birch and walnut, so where would people find something? It's not something you just go to the lumberyard and get, I don't think.
You know, you can get Baltic birch from a lot of lumberyards, though. I mean, as the name implies, it's from the Baltic region, which in these days, with kind of instability in that area of the world, it's harder to get for sure.
Oh, yes.
A lot of cabinet makers use it, but I get mine, ironically, through Home Depot. It's not sold at Home Depot, but it's special ordered from a company directly from North Carolina.
Ah, well, it really, I mean, it just does magnificent stuff, and it I think because of the style of the furniture that you build, it really kind of plays nicely with that simplicity, but gives it some, I called it movement. I don't know if that's the right word, but
Totally.
Yeah, it feels like it's got a voice. It's got a personality.
Mm-hmm.
How do you achieve that?
And a lot of mid-century designers like Charles and Ray Eames, if you know mid-century design at all, you know they're kind of plywood furniture and chairs, and they use something very similar to what I'm using now. So a lot of it's almost a throwback to an era that's no longer here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just really beautiful. And I think people need to come to the Lakeville Art Festival to see your booth, one, but they can check the website to get inspired to see what you're doing. It draws you in. Those pieces are things that you could have in your home. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned is how important it is for you to have things that get passed on, right? Things that are going to last. They're not just something you buy as an interim piece. They're the pieces that you want to hold on to and cherish for a long time. What are some of the stories your customers have told you about the pieces that they've purchased from you?
You know, I've not had any people pass them down yet. I'm rather new in business. I established my business in 2018, so hopefully no one's passing them down. But
there might be some cool dorm rooms.
funnily enough, there was someone who runs another one of the art fairs. His son bought one for his dorm room, a queen-size bed, in fact, which I was impressed with.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a dorm room. The ones that I was in never had room for a queen size bed, so
exactly.
That must be spectacular.
And this is full headboard, everything.
Wow, that's going to be the coolest room.
For sure.
Absolutely. Tell us a little about your memories about the Lakeville Art Festival. I know that I mentioned last year you were best in show, which is a very exciting honor. And so you've been doing that show for a few years now. What are some of your favorite stories from your time at the Lakeville Art Festival?
You know, I think there's a couple things from kind of a customer patron perspective. It is so nicely laid out,
mm-hmm.
and it's very casual isn't the right word, but it's just very easy to get around. It's, you know, there's a lot of shade, there's a lot of amenities. So from a customer perspective, it's just kind of great. You don't have to walk a mile and a half to see all the booths, which is fantastic. From an artist perspective, the thing that always comes to mind when I think about Lakeville is just the way that Sarah and her staff treat the artists. It's second to none, really. They're the best. They're the best at it. I mean,
yep.
they feed us. They're at the booth as soon as we need some help. They're just really fantastic.
It's a very welcoming atmosphere from both. You get that sense when you're a guest there that the artists are just beloved there. And that really does feel nice. We should give a huge shout out Sarah Stolwell. She's been a great supporter of Art Zany Radio. Every year we do a little promo for the Lakeville Art Festival. She's the festival director and just an extraordinary human being. And I'm just so excited for her for this year. It's going to be the 19th annual Lakeville Art Festival, which is just astounding to me that it's been that many years. And this year they are expecting over 100 juried artists. So they're back to full capacity after a couple of all the years we've all been through with strange COVID years. And so it feels like it's back to its full capacity. And like you mentioned, the grounds are flat. You know, there's no hills. It's in a semicircle. It's very easy to move about and very easy to see everything. There's just so much to do. And one of the things they also do is support emerging artists. And there are going to be 7 this year who are showing their work for the very first time. And that's a really big deal. And I think the thing that the Lakeville Art Festival does is gives those artist exposure to other artists who they can ask questions and see how they operate their booth. And I think the Lakeville Art Festival helps them with, you know, getting their tent set up and gives, you know, has people help them decide about how to display. There's so many things that go into being in a festival. What are some of the things that you've learned about the business of art through doing some of these shows?
Well, I think the first thing I've learned is that art is definitely a business. I look back and think, I don't have an art degree or a business degree, and I look back and think, man, what would be most useful? Probably the business degree, because it's really necessary to know that end of it between marketing and pricing and all those things. And preparing for festivals is a unique experience because you're limited in what you can show people. I get a 10x10 space that's got white vinyl walls, so it's not the most aesthetically pleasing, you know, just to walk in. So I really learned over a few years that my booth in particular, being a furniture and home goods booth, I had to make it look like a home. Just having things on the wall or sacked or I don't even know what it's called, but what the photographers used to rifle through their work, it just wasn't going to work for me.
Oh, bins, yeah.
So now I've got a living room. I've got lighting and rugs and plants and it, you know, you walk in and a lot of kids come in and say, oh, this is a house, I think.
I love it. Yeah, it's such a good thing. You do have to figure out how to make use of that space to make it inviting, but also to showcase your work. And what a great way for you to do that, because it's you know, your pieces are slightly different. It's not as easy to take home a credenza from an art show. And so,
only a few people have ever asked to do that, and I've sadly had to turn them down.
Right, because all of your pieces are, you know, custom crafted. But you do have some, I do want to draw attention to people, that you have some really magnificent wall decor, I guess, and little, describe some of your extra pieces that you have that are sort of a smaller invitation to take home some of your woodworking.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I started doing art fairs, I realized kind of early on that I needed to have things at all price points because, as you mentioned, most people don't come to an art fair for a lovely afternoon of browsing art and think, well, I'm going to spend $3,000 on a credenza today. It's just not in the cards for most people, and I get that. So I realized I needed to have something at every price point. So my most affordable item is my holiday ornaments. Those are $10 each. And then I've got home goods that go up to $400 for a really nice hexagon wall shelf unit. And, you know, then there's the furniture on the higher end. But we've got all sorts of things. We've got cribbage boards are a favorite. I mentioned the ornaments already. And then some sculptural animal pieces. I've got a few different birds that I offer using the same plywood that I use on the furniture. So some birds and some elephants.
Yeah, I think those are, especially those birds, are really captivating because, again, you keep with that same principle that you have, you know, simple, elegant, you know, mid-century vibe, and they, just the shape of them alone, just the design is very, very appealing. I can just see how they would light up a room and really impressive, just even that small little joy.
Yeah, you know, I've always been, like I said, been attracted to mid-century design and minimalism. So when I'm designing the pieces, the birds or the elephant, it's really about stripping away anything that isn't absolutely necessary to get the idea across. So, you know, I have a heron, and I know very little about birds, so I'm probably going to really upset some bird lovers out here. But I know the heron or the crane has something coming off of its head. Like a feather or something. I'm really showing my cards here, but I took that away. And so I've had a few people say, well, you know, it should have this or it should have that. But for me, it's just about, you know, a silhouette, a very basic silhouette, and really pulling back things as simply as possible.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really wonderful. And I have to say, I'm a giant fan of the hexagon shape. I had a planner a couple years ago that the whole thing was based on the idea of hexagons. And it's just a very satisfying shape. It's something, you know, it just really lends itself to creating order and simplicity, but elegance. Your shelves are very appealing, and those are, I would imagine, a favorite as well.
They are, yeah. And, you know, if people come out on Saturday for the festival and decide they want to get those, I usually can drive them back the next day and have them right there for them. So it's a little bit of a incentive to come the first day of the festival, I think.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, so you can place your order and then come pick it up the next day?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, folks, we are here on Art Zany Radio. I'm talking with Justin Hossel at HosselWoodworks.com. You should definitely check that out. He's going to be at the Lakeville Art Festival this weekend. It is just a glorious festival, and it's happening Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday from 10 to 4. That's September 17th and 18th. It's just those 2 days, so you'll want to make sure and add that to your calendar. Even if you've got other things planned, you need to rearrange that to make sure you make time to go. I just really adore this festival. One of the things they do is a community art project, and this year it's going to be a sailboat sculpture. And so they're going to ask people to help them finish it by painting sections of it. And then that's going to be put in Pioneer Park in Lakeville. So I think that's a really fun, especially I know my kids have participated in several of those and, you know, can say, I painted that part of the moose, or I can't remember some of the other sculptures that they did, but there are definitely great memories that are created for that. And if you've got a young one there, or even if you're young at heart, there's a youth art tent that is just, you know, if you're looking for some way to feel inspired or, you know, kind of shake up those want to get back to that world of play, or you're a little jealous of what your kids are doing in art class, this is a tent full of supplies. Ryan is going to be there again, and they have these giant easels. Kids can, you know, play the artist, be the artist, make something that they just imagine. And I love, because they often hang the wet paintings in the trees while you go around and look at the rest of the festival. So it makes for its own display of just exuberance and creativity and the joy of imagination. So go there. They also have lots of other little things that you can build. I think my kids one year built wind chimes out of CDs and beads, and it was just something delightful. So it's a fun experience for all. So there's a lot happening, and that's just the beginning of it. But I do want to go back to your beginnings and hear a little bit from you, Justin, about how you got started in woodworking, because your story is kind of a unique story. I'd love for our listeners to be able to share and hear from you a little bit about that.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it is a unique story. I feel like in a lot of ways I just kind of fell into it or tripped into woodworking. As a child, I mean, I did love Legos and building things like that. Legos, and I built a lot of forts in our straw barn. So I would take bales of straw and build them up into structures and tunnels. And then I switched directions. And by the time I was 10 or 11, I was fully immersed in theater, live theater. And I started out as an actor, and I actually left, after high school, went and got a degree as an actor. And halfway through that, I realized, no, I don't want to be an actor. I want to be a stage manager, because I think maybe I was getting back to my roots a little and wanting to build again. And even though I wasn't physically building as a stage manager, I was really managing and organizing and helping to craft pieces.
Mm.
And so I spent a lot of years as a stage manager. My last 12 years in the business was at the Guthrie Theater, where I met my wife, who was also a stage manager there. And so I was working there, and then we bought a house, and I tinkered with, you know, this and that, and I could put a little shelf here, no problem. And at some point, I got it in my head that I could make myself a coffee table.
Hmm.
And I found a YouTube video of a guy making a mid-century-styled coffee table. And so I thought, okay, I can get a miter saw and a table saw and learn how to use these. And I just started playing, and that happened. I built the coffee table. It was fine. It wasn't great.
Functional.
And then I was working on a production at the Guthrie, and my assistant next to me was shopping for a coffee table. And I said, oh, I could build you one. No big deal. And he said, well, I'd pay you. And I'm, oh, no, you don't need to pay me. That's silly. But then kind of, you know, I always say, like, it went from a snowflake to a snowball. Like, the snowflake fell, and then I thought, well, I should have a brand or a logo if I'm going to make him a coffee table that I can put on the bottom. And then that started rolling. And within a year and a half, I had established the business. And then a year later, I left my job as a stage manager and took on the furniture making full time.
Wow, that's a big, fast transition.
It just happened. And I look back now and say, oh, wow, that's happened, and it's still happening, and I'm still growing, and I'm in some ways not in charge of it. It's just doing its thing.
I wonder, that makes sense when you talk about the way you wanted to stage your tent then, that you had that experience of creating, you know, things that would invite people to, you know, imagine a real place or see something. But how else has, I think that's a really fascinating detail, how else has the theater affected, you know, your design or the way you approach your business or how you work with customers? I would think that's really great training, but one that people don't often think of as a launching point for a career.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, in theater, I've learned to adapt to a lot of unique personalities and types of people. I'll leave that at that. So that's really great in just day-to-day interactions with customers and handling different requests, and certainly for customizing things. And it's also helped out just in, as a stage manager, my whole job was organizing. And so I was in spreadsheets and documents all day long.
Mm.
And so keeping my business organized is really a one-person setup here. having that experience of knowing how to work through a spreadsheet or accounting software has really been beneficial to me.
Yeah, a lot of artists don't start with
that. Working with designers for so long in the theater, where they, you know, watching them dress the set and craft the set, it helped give me an eye for something that was aesthetic or maybe not as aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, you were able to sort of hone those skills when you weren't even realizing that's what you were doing or that's where your world was going to turn to. And you talk about that aesthetic, and I'm curious how you developed that, because it feels like there's a, you know, if you look across all the different pieces, there is a consistency to what you're doing. So somewhere within you, there's a, you know, way that you've said, this is it, this is, you know, me coming through in the furniture. How do you think that developed? And were there people along the way that helped to teach you some of that or helped you to, you know, learn your woodworking skills?
Well, I wish I could say there was a whole slew of teachers that helped me out. I think my biggest help in at least looking at things aesthetically has been my wife, who I send pictures to as I build and say, is this right? Does this look good? And she's like, no, maybe take an inch off here.
Oh.
But it's she's been a great help in just confirming or rejecting my thoughts. You know? she's very good at saying, no, that one doesn't look right.
You mentioned she was in the theater, too. What was her job?
She was also a stage manager. We met on a show, oh, gosh, how long ago was that now? 15, 20 years ago. I was her assistant on a show, and we became fast friends and blah, blah, blah. Now we're married with a kid.
Well, that was one lucky encounter, I would say.
I tell you what, yeah. But no, I mean, the aesthetic, a lot of it just comes from feeling. And, you know, I think about designers who, the golden ratios and all sorts of design rules. And in many ways in my life, I'm a big rule follower, but I guess in this way I'm not. As far as how I craft it, the techniques I use, and aesthetically what I find pleasing, I just wing it. And knock on wood, which there's plenty around me, you know, it's worked so far.
Yeah, well, it comes through. It shines through, and it's quite spectacular. And so I really hope Justin Hassel Furniture from your website, hasselwoodworks.com, gets to be something that people recognize and look and say, that's a Justin Hassel piece. Because it has that.
I hope so.
Yeah, it has that feeling. And one thing I'm really excited to talk to you about is the workshop space that you have now. You have a really beautiful studio. We get a glimpse of that in your website. And that had to be a big adventure to moving from, I would imagine you started working out of your basement at home and deciding to move into a studio. Tell us about that process and what your studio looks like now.
Exactly. Yeah, I started out in my basement and my garage. My basement had, I don't know, maybe it was 8 foot by 16 foot of space.
That's tiny.
And then the garage had a place where I could put the table saw. And that was great until December, and then I hated it. You know, some days I'm not meant to be in Minnesota because the winter doesn't agree with me. But but then I found a space. I live in Northeast Minneapolis, which is kind of the heart of the arts in the Twin Cities. It's the Northeast Minneapolis Arts District here. And I found a space about 400 square feet. It was down a flight of stairs, and I could barely fit a sheet of plywood in, but it worked, and I made it for a year. And then I got to talking with one of the owners of one of the art buildings here in Northeast, and her name's Jennifer Young. She owns the California building and the Casket Arts building,
two iconic places.
Really iconic places in the arts district. And she said, oh, I have this space that's 2,000 square feet, and I'm holding it back for someone I know and someone that's, you know, special. And I said, ooh, I hope I'm special. Can I come see it? So she let me see it. And it's really transformed my business. I've got a huge work floor. My company vehicle can sit inside so I can unload materials, load them up. I've got a finishing room and a 300 square foot showroom. And it's really, you know, it's really taken me to another level, just as far as what I can do and can fit in the room.
What were some of the first tools once you got that big space that you decided, I gotta get this?
Well, the first tool was replacing my old table saw with kind of a really high quality one that keeps me safe. Mm-hmm. It's called a Saw Stop. And some of your listeners may have seen it before, but it's a tool that it can sense if skin or a finger touches the blade. And there's a mechanism inside that pulls the blade down within like a nanosecond and keeps you from losing fingers. So
Wow. When
I had the big space, I said, this is the first thing I have to do. I have to invest in, you know, my livelihood, my fingers.
I had not heard of this technology. This is extraordinary.
It's pretty amazing. And if you go to SawStop online, hopefully they'll send me a nice little commission check here. they demo it with a hot dog. So they run the hot dog through, and there's not a scratch on the hot dog. It just pulls it right away.
What a great example. That would be a little scary to say, could you be my subject and test this out?
Yeah. But how do we demo this one?
Yeah. and so that is, I guess I'm thinking of my dad. You know, he was always so careful with it. But just to imagine that you can eliminate, I mean, you still have to follow all the safety protocols, I assume. But it just gives you a sense of ease in your space, right? You can be
Absolutely.
Confident. Because there, you know, there
and that's,
are things.
And that's the machine that I'm on, you know, much of the time. So knowing that I can be there and just, not that I'm certainly not, you're like you said, still being careful, but I feel a little more confident in knowing that after a long day, when sometimes your mind does wander, I'm a little safer.
Yeah. And folks, one of the things that's also great about the Lakeville Art Festival is that you can spend the whole day there. And you should plan. You can come both days. It is, I should mention, I don't think I said this before, but it's free of charge and parking is also free. So there's really no reason to not go. And there's plenty of parking around the Lakeville Art Center. And even, I think they even have a drop-off spot for folks that maybe want to, you know, drop someone who might have a little harder time walking, but there's plenty of parking around that area. And they also have a fun food court that has everything from wood-fired pizza, Asian food, Hispanic food, barbecue, cheesesteak, ice cream, kettle corn, lemonade, handmade chocolates, cookies. You never know what you're going to find there. And in addition, there's a stage there, so they've got some musicians. This year, there's going to be a roaming musician. I guess I don't think I've met Paul Imholt. The name sounds really familiar, though, so some of you may know him out there. And so that's kind of a nice atmospheric addition to the space. And so folks can, you know, spend lots of time. There's a little playground there. That's what my kids used to like to do. We take shifts. You hang out at the playground with the kids. I'm going to go do a tour. Then we trade and come back. So it's really a family-friendly event as well. I think that's a nice thing about it. And I imagine, do you have a favorite food vendor you can recommend to folks?
I always go for that wood-fired pizza. But, you know, I'm not a good person to ask. I'm vegetarian, so I'm a little bit limited. So I'm sure there's amazing things there other than that, though.
Right. And it is. I think they do have the perfect setup for a fair. If everyone could be like that, I think there'd be more of them around because they do such a good job.
Yeah, and I would tell people don't let some sprinkles or some rain showers stop them because, you know, most of the tents are covered, so you can go from tent to tent even if it's sprinkling out.
Yes, and as you mentioned, they have the trees on that property are just those spectacular themselves, and they provide a lot of shade and protection from those light sprinkles, which is kind of nice. And that brings me to the question about your workshop, because you advocate that being green is important to you. So tell us how you achieve that in a woodworking business.
You know, it's definitely hard because I definitely consume a lot of materials and goods. There are some things I can avoid and some things I can't. But the product I work with, the plywood product that we've talked about, the Baltic Birch veneered panels, they're made in a really green way, and the company is just fantastic. It's a soy-based glue, so in a plywood, typically you find formaldehyde glues, and this is all soy-based, really, really safe on me, safe on the customer eventually. And it's void free, which means that in the individual sheets, there's not a lot of places where there were knots that are going to make it a weaker plywood. So it's really strong, sustainable in that way. And I use natural finishes, as natural as they can be. I use pure tung oils and linseed oils. And I'm just not big into a lot of sprays and things that kind of, you know, aren't good for me short or long term and aren't good for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big thing I do is that I have partnered with a company called One Tree Planted. I wish I could tell you exactly where they're based in the U.S., but it's mostly online, so I can't tell you offhand. But I give a donation to them, and I donate the equivalent of one tree for every product I sell. So if you come and you buy five ornaments from me, you end up planting five trees. And I do a monetary donation to them once a year based on my sales. And then wherever in the world the need is greatest at the time, often it's replanting after wildfires, things like that, or the logging companies have come through, and they plant new trees. So I'm trying to replenish what I take as much as I can.
I think that's a really, you've really thought this out, and I think it's a great approach. I didn't even realize that some of these things existed. The soy-based glue is something new, but you found that it has no other, you know, it still has all the properties you'd want in gluing and keeping things together.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, it's a really strong glue, and, you know, just knowing that. And I even going back further than me to the people in the plants who are making these materials, that they're, you know, a little bit safer on the end. And it's all, the plywood's all LEED certified. It can be used in green building ventures. So it's really a product that I feel proud to use. And I've developed a great relationship with the company. I don't know. I lucked out on that one for sure.
Yeah, and so, okay, so let's talk about, here's what's coming to my mind. You use plywood sheets, but then you look at the pieces that you have, and there are a lot of curves and some really gorgeous curves. I got to ask, because that is not something that you think plywood can do. So are you willing to share a little of how you get some of those? I'm thinking especially of some of those ends on the coffee tables and the side tables and the, you know, just, you know, that's astounding to me. So you do tell.
Yeah. So I have two pieces that I cut almost through the whole way, and then I'm able to bend it. It's hard to describe, I think. Definitely come out to my booth because I've got a little sample of it and can show people. But imagine a sheet of plywood going through a table saw and the table saw, you know, cutting through it the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I lower the blade ever so slightly, and I'm talking, oh, I don't know, a 16th of an inch, a 32nd of an inch below the height of the plywood, then I'm left with kind of a skin on top. It's really where the walnut veneer is, and maybe a little bit more. And then it actually can bend. The veneer is thin enough that I can bend it and create these curves. And the curves kind of ended up having these slits going through. When you look from the front of the piece, I'm looking at the end table right now. When you look from the front, it has these almost triangular slits going through it. It's called a kerf cut. The kerf means the width of the blade. So it's kerf cutting these up to the final veneer, and then I bend it to shape.
Wow.
And so I fill that in. Then I fill that in with a mixture of walnut sawdust and glue, which gives it almost a striped effect. And when you look at the piece, you can kind of see how the sausage is made in a way. You can look at the piece and say, "Oh, you know, I see." There was an old line in theater that we would say, "If you can't hide it, feature it."
Ooh.
Now I could have hidden this, but I thought this was more fun to feature it.
It just is kind of like a magic trick, I think. It really looks
beautiful.
Well,
that's why I've got the sample at the booth, because people come in and say, "How did this happen?" And then I show them and they say, "Ooh, it's like magic."
Exactly. And if I'm remembering correctly, you have kind of a book, an inspiration book, for that people can look through to see some of the pieces, you know, that you make, you know, because you can't have everything that you make in that booth.
Exactly. Yeah, what I've got right now is just in the past few months, I've released a collection of pieces. So I still do some custom work, but I call it my Eos collection, E-O-S. Eos was the Greek goddess of dawn, and so this was my first collection, so I thought, well, it's like the morning, it's like dawn. So I've got a catalog or a book that's got all the pieces of that collection in it, and then I'll have a couple copies at the art fair of a catalog I've just put out, mostly geared towards interior designers, of the same collection of pieces. And I think there's 15 furniture pieces in the collection.
And do you do things for all kinds of different rooms in the house, right? You can...
Yeah, we've got, let's see, you know, we've got beds and nightstands and dressers and end tables, coffee tables, desks, what else? Consoles, sideboards, kind of run it, spanning the gamut there. I don't do chairs, so if you're wanting a chair, I'll be a big disappointment. I've got vanities, just all sorts of kind of room-by-room pieces.
Yeah, and it is just something, you know, I'm always trying to figure out, you know, what do I need or how can I fit something in? And when you see those beautiful pieces, you instantly want some of those in your space too. They're just really beautiful. I love that mid-century vibe and the elegance and simplicity and the craftsmanship that comes through is just, it's clear that you love what you do, you know, that comes through.
Well, thanks. That's certainly true. Yeah, I do. I do. I feel really blessed to have found a niche that works for me and that I was able to transition into. And it's just, you know, we all have our days, but most days I come in and when I look at the clock and it says 4 o'clock, I say, oh, already?
That's a good sign.
It is. Hopefully it lasts.
But tell us a little about what is in your workshop now or what people, you know, if they, sometimes there are open studio tours or times up in those Northeast artist lofts and spaces. What might they see if they were able to see inside your studio?
Yeah, so we're usually open the second Saturday of every month for what they call Second Saturdays. It's an inventive name, I'll tell you. but it's second Saturdays of every month from 11 to 4. And then in the spring, many of you may have heard of Art Whirl. That's the big Northeast Minneapolis open studio thing. And then we have a fall one as well coming up in November that our building called California Dreaming, because we're the California building.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's 3 days of open studios right before the holiday season. And right now in my studio, let's see, I've got a client who was very kind to me and purchased an end table and a bathroom mirror and vanity and a radiator cover and a media console. So two of those are in the finishing room ready to get oiled up, and two of those I'll probably get them finished up today and into the finishing room as well. So I see the bottom of a vanity and the bottom of a console now, and hopefully there will be more in a few hours.
Right, and so people would get to see, you said you have a space where, like a showroom, so people can maybe, you know, get ideas of how to use your pieces or look at ways that your pieces have been incorporated into spaces.
Exactly, yeah. Everything that's in my collection, if it's not with me at the art fair, it's in the showroom. So the idea is that, you know, as I expand the collection, even I always want to have one kind of display model available. So if someone comes out this weekend and says, oh, I love that desk, but I don't have it with me, I always invite them back and they can take a look at it in person.
Right. That's an important thing. Sometimes just being able to, you know, lay your hands and see what the finish feels like, or look at those edges that you've created, which is such a great signature. I you know, can't wait to see them again and see how you do that. So,
you know, and it helps that, like you had mentioned, I do have kind of a consistent theme through my pieces. They all have a similar aesthetic. So even if you don't want to come to Minneapolis and see the sideboard, you can look at another piece in my booth and really get a feel for what it's going to be like. And it's important to me as I design my collection and future pieces, I always feel like they have to be on brand for me.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of really interesting suggestions of different things to build, but at the end of the day, I have to go back to, well, first of all, how I can manufacture it economically and sell it at a good price, but also, does this fit the collection? Does this fit the look of the other pieces?
That's so absolutely true.
And you've got to keep it all cohesive.
And so, I guess I didn't ask if you have a specific booth location that you want to promote so people know where to find you at the Lakeville Art Festival.
So, I don't know how to describe. I'm on the opposite side of the complex there from the food, and I'm under a tree. I think I'm booth 99, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Well, I do know they do give away maps, and there's a beautiful information booth right as you walk up the front entrance, so you can see that. And there are they usually have volunteers working in a, I don't know what their color T-shirt is going to be this year, but they usually have something that makes them very recognizable. So lots of people will be able to help. I hope that many of the folks listening will make time for the Lakeville Art Festival. It is really one of my favorites. I make sure and make time for it. It is Saturday, September 17th from 10 to 5 and Sunday, September 18th from 10 to 4. And they do have, I think, some of the best volunteers. I know we have a great volunteer spirit here in Northfield, but there's something special in this particular festival. And I want to send another shout out to Sarah Stolwell, who is the festival director, who just does an extraordinary job to bring everybody together. It takes a lot of community support and sponsorship and just a whole lot of coming together to make something like this happen. So I'm sure you're excited to be there this weekend. Yes.
Always excited to go to Lakeville. And, you know, like I had mentioned, they're so good to the artists. It feels like going on a vacation in some ways.
Wow, that's a great compliment.
I better be careful. I mean, now it's going to be stormy and everything. So
No, it won't.
I've really set myself up.
Well, I think it feels like a great vacation and inspiration, right? I walk around going, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. I want that and that and that and that. And so it can be a little dangerous.
You know, exactly. And it's such a manageable size event. I mean, there are so many great art fairs in the Twin Cities. Some are very, very large, and you can get a sense, if you're the type of person who wants to see everything, get a little overwhelmed. But here it's such a perfect size. You can see everything, you know, in a full day or come back for a second day. But it's just a really great atmosphere.
Yes, and so I hope many of you will let Justin know that you heard about his work on Artzany Radio. Hassel Woodworks is the name of his group, hasselwoodworks.com. You can get more pictures and information, but I recommend you visit his booth. Thank you so much for being a part of Artzany Radio today.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed it. We'll see you at the Lakeville Art Festival.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. Folks, this is Artzany Radio for the imagination, and I thank you for listening and for being a part of this show, and really am excited for all things coming up. It feels like we're going back into a little space where things are moving in the direction of returning to what we used to love and enjoy, and that makes life great. So take part in all the things that you love, and of course, add some Artzany to your life. And if you make sure that you do that, you always find time to enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Artzany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Artzany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. The 2022 Studio Art Tour is coming up. Join us Saturday and Sunday, October 1st and 2nd, starting at 10 a.m. Featured local artists open their studios to show you how they create their ceramics, painting, jewelry, textiles, glass, metal, and wood artistry. The Studio Art Tour region includes artisans from Farmington, Northfield, Nearstrand, and Faribault. Some of the studios open Friday from 4 to 8, then all will be open Saturday 10 to 6 and Sunday 10 to 5. See their website, studioarttour.com, for details.
Shumway